How to deal with the idea of death. That's from Dunya. Asks how to deal with the idea of death. Tell me a little bit more of one's own death. Well, there is no death. There is no death experience. To have a death experience, the yourself would have to die, you know. So it's really more of a change of scenery, but that change of scenery also you've been through an infinite number of times, beginningless times. So Denny says, yes, but the body and mind die. Well, the body dies. The mind on a subtle level with some scars and whatnot remains. The mind doesn't die. So your ahankar, that means also your ahankar, the eye notion doesn't die, the sense organs don't die. So your mind, your sense organs, your organs of action, your pranas, the five pranas, the ahankara, chitta, all the capacities of the mind, those transmigrate. So the soul, there's two levels of continuation. One is your own being doesn't change at all. Right? Your own being, the me, doesn't change at all. And then the subtle body transmigrates. Then Dunya says, but isn't that only for jivas with self-ignorance? Yeah. Yeah, for the jnani, there is no transmigration because there's already the mind is complete with your own being. Your mind already is not looking for another experience. It doesn't have any more samskaras. It doesn't, there's no gasoline to make it want to continue on. And so that, when that, you just go back to your own nature, which is Brahman, which is actually Ishvara. Just like the difference between having a dream where you're not embodied in the dream or being embodied in the dream. So you say, so I didn't know you were talking about Ajnani, but both for the Ajnani and the Ajnani, there is no death experience. Because the death experience would require death of the self. And there's not even the slightest change in yourself. It's like waking up from a dream, even though you die in the dream. The body, mind, sense organs die in the dream. There is no death experience because the truth of the body, mind, sense organs and the dream itself is only the Atma. So there's not even the slightest experience of death. And then say if you are transmigrating because that Ajnanam is there, then on that level also there's no experience of death. There's just a continuation, which is not something unknown to you because you've done it and from beginningless time. So that is held from you at this time, right? As when you're embodied, but when you're without the body, then the time of being without the body is something that's well known to you. You could even look at it kind of like when I'm here in the waking state, I don't know, I don't know what the dream state is until I'm in the dream state. You see what I mean? It's like they're two different orders of reality. So when you move into that space between physical, having a physical body, having only the subtle body, that's not something unknown to you. You say, and is the case of someone without nishta? This case of somebody without nishta is transmigrating of the jiva, but also for them, as well as for the jnani, the self doesn't transmigrate. There's never this any flicker at all. There's no death experience for the self at all. This me is that remains the same always. So I think for somebody you can say there's somebody might be worried about death. For a jnani, I don't think there's much as much worry about death. I mean, I'm not really looking forward to suffering, physical suffering. I don't think anybody is, but that's just a fact that you have to deal with when it's happening. And it's better just to deal with the reality as it happens rather than project and imagine what it's going to be like. I feel that way about looking into the future. In any case, it's better to deal with the present and be in the present and handle the present to the best of your ability, and you'll do that when your body is suffering also, if the body is ill. But the death experience, I kind of like what Steve Jobs said when he was dying and his family was around him. He was dying, meaning his body was shutting down and he was ejecting, I suppose, if you want to say. And he just said, "Wow." Because there's the recognition that there's no such thing as death. So I think for a jnani, as if you realize that in terms of the body, mind, sense organs, that you are with Ishvara. The one who's not going to leave you is Ishvara. Yourself will never leave. And then in terms of you in relationship to the creation, you're always with Bhagavan. But all other relationships are finite, you know. You may be with somebody for a long period of time, but they'll die, or you'll separate and go your separate ways. And all experiences, even on this loka, come and go. Even the places where you are, once you're at this place, and now you're at this place, once you had this friend, now you have these friends, your situations continually change, but you're always there. So this death is a more radical change. You're going into a whole new loka, coming back with a different body for an ajnani. And for a jnani, you're just abiding as your own nature without ignorance. That means Brahman, yourself, which is Ishvara. I think people, even ajnanis who have had, and there's many documents, documented in so many ways. I myself was lucky enough to have this kind of experience where you have a near-death experience. You realize there's no such thing as death, that there is no death experience. Okay, Danya, good. Nella says, how do you explain that though Atma is self-effulgent and self-shining, the experience is like a reflection? No, not the experience of the Atma. Oh, I have to do this. I have to talk a little bit about this. So let me read the question. How do you explain that though Atma is self-effulgent and self-shining, the experience is like a reflection that can be as though muddled or rippled by the mind's condition, yet regardless of its condition, it is possible to turn the mind's focus to the self, which isn't muddy or rippled? Okay. You know, there's a problem with the drishtanta itself. Even though we use it, let me talk a little bit about the problem with the illustration. All of these illustrations are called drishtantas. All of them that we use are limited because they all take place within duality and they hold good for us in a certain way. But in another way, they break down. And if you cross the line in terms of the relevance of the drishtanta, you can get yourself into trouble. So here, let's look at this one. There's the sun shining in the water, say the clear water of the lake, and the sun then has a reflection of itself. The sun is reflected in that lake, okay? So now, the problem with this is that first of all, the Atma is not away from the mind like the sun is away from the lake. That's the first problem with this drishtanta. There is no distance between the Atma and the mind. Okay. There's also no separate reflection. It's just that the mind itself being sattva, as though manifests or as though reflects the self. But now, what do they mean by that? Reflects the self. It means that the sattva, the material of the mind, right, is such that it can take itself, it can identify itself with the self. It identifies itself with the self. Whereas, say, a rock, that tamas material, it doesn't have the capacity to identify itself with the self. We say reflect the self, but what we really mean, it doesn't have the capacity to say, I am the self. It doesn't have the capacity to do this, what we call anyonya adhyasa, mutual superimposition. Like if we use the example for this mutual superimposition, if we use the example of the rock, I mean of the red hot iron ball. With the red hot iron ball example, the fire is more subtle than the iron, and so the iron and the fire are able to, the fire is able to totally permeate the iron, okay? And so the iron feels like it itself is red and hot, that it itself is responsible for the redness and the hotness. See what I mean? That's a mutual superimposition. So that iron, even though it's inert, it's not hot, it's cold and hard, in fact. But that iron ball then can say, you know, I am red and hot, as though the redness and the hotness belongs to it, but it doesn't. It's that this is what we mean by, but so it will say, I am red and hot, and then red and hot becomes round and heavy. That's what we mean by mutual superimposition. Say it's that they use the same example, another example of the crystal ball. If you bring a red flower up near the crystal ball takes on the conditioning of the red flower, right? And so that's a type of mutual superimposition where the crystal feels that it is red and the redness is in the form of a crystal. That type of thing, it's mutual superimposition. So here, in reference to the Maya, now we're working with really Satyam, we're working with consciousness, conscious being, and Maya. This mutual superimposition is taking place on the side of Maya. Maya has no being of its own. The being of Maya, right, is only consciousness, conscious being. The nature of conscious being is ananda, is wholeness, is fullness. It's the me, the very nature of me. Nature of me, the consciousness doesn't have a mind. It's not saying, you know, oh, I am my mind. Consciousness isn't doing anything. It's not saying anything. So the whole problem of mutual superimposition is taking place on the part of Maya, on the part of the mind. But being Maya, there is no distance or there is no being or no self that the Maya enjoys other than me. But it takes itself to be me. That's the problem. It is me, but it takes itself to be me and me to be it. That's where the problem is. There's two orders of reality here. I'm never changing, and I never have become the mind. But the mind has no being away from me. So even though it has no being away from me, there's no reason for it not to take itself to be me. But the mind has the capacity to be muddied or to be agitated or to be clear, especially going after raga dveshas. Any time that you fulfill a raga dvesha, the mind becomes clear, it becomes quiet, it becomes desireless. And in that condition, it's simply not competing in any way with my own being. But the mind is capable of taking on different types of modifications different types of agitation or darkness or stress or hatred, all of the negative emotions. You know, they're just different levels of stress is how I view it. They're different levels of stress that compete with my own nature. And since the mind has not been has never differentiated me from itself, when its nature is competing with me, then I am still there, but I become sad or angry or hateful or whatever it happens to be. So the Ajnani requires the mind to be quiet, to be desireless, for it to feel at home, at peace, because it has no viveka between itself, its own different types of thought modifications, and my being. There's no viveka, there's no discrimination. And so my being is always only seen through the lens of the emotions and perceptions of the mind. What happens when the mind, because of teaching really, has differentiated, has been able to differentiate my own, the changelessness and wholeness of my own being from the vrittis in the mind? Right, then there's no problem. In fact, I become a refuge. I, in fact, don't even, once that viveka is there, I don't really have to, I'm aware of my mind and the vrittis at the same time, because the mind is self-evident and the vritti shines after the self-evident me. So I'm aware of both of them at the same time. When my mind gets on what I call like a daydream, if it goes on some kind of a daydream, which I kind of like that example actually, it's unconscious. Daydreams are unconscious. When your mind gets pulled away back into its ajnanam, into its habitual ignorance, habitual behavior, that's like a daydream. And you just have to wake up. And then you're there, and the vrittis are there. If the vrittis are dull or they're unhappy because of some habitual ignorance, you just have to bring it back home. I don't know, Nella, did I get too far off from your question? To me, I'm answering it nicely. But I don't know. I don't know if that's working for you or not. Let me know. Somewhat. You want to make it more clear?
Well, you know, your being can, myself, my being, me, really becomes, seems to become sad, even though you can have the viveka that says that I am not the conditions in my mind.
Edward's saying, yes, but sometimes my being seems to become sad when I'm sad, even if I know I'm not the conditions in my mind. Well, you know, that's because the mind has really overwhelmed your buddhi, mm-hmm. in a sense, and there's nobody making that viveka. Mm-hmm. There comes a time when your mind's not, no matter what the vritti is or no matter what the emotion is, mm-hmm. Yourself is differentiated from that. And so you can actually have an emotion or a reaction or a sadness or whatever it happens to be, but it's not covering you.
Can you sense both of them equally?
Yes, both at the same time. Both at the same time.
But
because you're the constant.
But the intensity of both is the same.
The intensity of both. The intensity of the mind fluctuates, right? Like you can have a very unhappy vritti, or you can have a very quiet mind. You can all different sorts of thought modifications are there. You know, all different sorts of thought modifications are there, but they don't cover you. Once they don't cover you, until then, there's too much focus on your mind, and you're just yourself. In reference from the standpoint of the mind, you're self hasn't become dominant again enough. And I think that's due to really a lack of vairagya. The mind is still kind of lost. The raga dveshas are still too important. You know, they still grab the mind too much.
Well, the mind wants to be comfortable and secure.
Yeah, but the Edward says the mind wants to be comfortable and secure. That's true, but the one who's comfortable and secure is really the self. So all the mind has to do is be with me, and then it's comfortable and secure. I'm the comfortable, secure one, right? And if the mind is depending upon samsara to be comfortable and secure,
yeah,
that doesn't work very well. That's very, what do you call it? That's kind of ephemeral. You can't hang on to it, to that at all. It's very insecure, actually. Mm-hmm. But the self is always comfortable, always secure. It's absolutely timeless and changeless. And so the more the mind recognizes that, the more it just likes to be with me and experience the world. Experiencing, being with me, it experiences the world. But I don't need the mind to be with me for me to be me. So I don't require the mind to be with me for me to be me and for me to be self-shining, because the ajnanam has been removed. There's nothing covering me. There's no ajnanam there, as though covering.
So the vairagya is holding on to that refuge, holding on to the security of the self, rather than trying to accomplish that in
yeah, vairagya is knowledge. The vairagya is knowledge. Right? Because that means that my mind is with me. That's where the ananda is. That's where the stability is. That's where the well-being is. There's no distance from me, between my mind and me. So there's no hassle. There's nowhere to go. Nobody can take it away from me. I just be with myself. And then I can objectively be with the world and be engaged in the world and be with the people that are in my life and be with the life, be with Ishwara. Because I'm not asking them to be different, because I'm not dependent upon them to be happy. And if I am dependent, then that's a sadhana. I bring my mind back. Which is a great relief to all of your friends, all the people that know you, because otherwise they have to be like this or like that or like this in order for you to be happy. And that's not a good situation for anybody.
Yeah.
That's a lot of misery in that for all involved. Vairagya is knowledge, then the vairagya grows as your knowledge becomes more clear.
Yeah.
The jnana nishtha is vairagya. Okay, so Nella says, you have said that everyone wants to be loved and compared that feeling to the ananda of the self. Could you please talk about this a little? Yeah. In terms of grammar, if you use a passive tense like to be loved, that is a completed state, right? It's a completed state. Whereas to love, I love, or to love is an action verb, if you know what I mean. I'm doing something. But when I'm being loved, if you take away from that being loved, I am loved by so-and-so, right? If you can take away the by so-and-so, it becomes what they call in Sanskrit a bhava prayoga. It means it's just the being itself. Like if I, in Sanskrit, I can put an intransitive verb into the passive case. Like an intransitive verb would be, the sun shines. But if I say the sun shines, shines can't take an object because it's the sun that is shining, right? So if you can't, it's like if I say the boy hits the ball, that's an intransitive. That's a transitive verb where the verb actually takes an object. But if I have an intransitive verb, it can't take an object. So like the sun shines, can't take an object. So I can say in Sanskrit, which we can't say in English, it is shown by the sun, right? So when I say that everyone wants to be loved, that is actually when I feel that I am loved. That is my own nature. In fact, nobody needs to be loving me for me to feel loved. I just need my mind to be quiet. I need the mind not to be full of all of these complexes, you know, or reactions or whatever. Because when I feel loved, actually, that's just my own nature. I'm the most at home with that. So when I say everybody wants to be loved, everybody is looking outside of themselves for somebody to love them so that they can be loved. But what I'm saying here, and it's really just a use of grammar and a use of language. Everybody wants to be loved, so they're looking for someone outside to love them, when actually that being loved is their own swarupa without any type of verbal activity. They are that. And so when the mind becomes very quiet and not competing with its levels and levels of complexes, that state of wholeness, like if I say that state of completeness, that state of well-being, that state of wholeness, that state of being loved, that's what I'm talking about. And we want that, you know.
Well, love makes the world go around. That's what motivates, pushes everyone.
That's what pushes everybody. But it's not just love. You see people, you see, oh, there's some people loving each other over there or whatever. You don't want that. That's fine, but that can just make you feel sad because you want to be loved. What you want is to be yourself.
Yeah.
So that the very source of that being loved is the self. And I think when you say that everybody wants to be loved, I don't know what strong how what a stronger thing you can say.
No, that's it.
Yeah. Because that's the truth of your nature. The best way to feel love, Swamiji said this once, in fact, the best way to feel loved, with or without knowledge, mm-hmm. for the mind to feel loved is to love. You know, the face that you give others is the face that you experience. And so if you want to feel loved, then you have to love.
Really?
Yeah. But you can, those that if you want to feel loved in terms of the outside world, then you have to love. But by loving, you also get rid of the pratibandhakas, the obstructions that stop you from loving. What stops you from loving? It's really fear. It's that abhayam, you know.
Fear in what way?
Fear that somebody's going to stop you from feeling loved. They're behaving
they'll
in such
down,
a
or
no. I mean, even they down. Cause irritation in you in one way or another. Mm-hmm. There's something about them; you push them away. Mm-hmm. It could just be the way their personality is, or the way they sit, or the way they walk, or the way they talk. Or it doesn't make any difference. For some reason or not, either you push them away, You push them away because of fear. Because of fear of what? That they cause some agitation in your mind that causes you to lose some of your wholeness. Because you're dependent upon your mind for your wholeness. You know? And your mind, you're dependent upon your mind being happy, having a shanta vritti. You know, so that you can feel whole. But then you depend upon the world being in a certain way and people being a certain way so you can have that shanta vritti. It's all totally illusion, the whole thing. You know, but it's a hard nut to crack because we have lifetimes, beginningless lifetimes of behaving in the world due to out of this ajnanam, you know. So we have to counteract it with this pratipaksha bhavana that Swamiji talks about. You do the opposite. When you find yourself being ruled by negative emotions of one kind or another, to just start doing the opposite. But you have to have some vairagya for that. You have to just realize that all of this is not, all of this samsara is simply not worth it at all. And you don't care about it, you don't want to get engaged in the world in that way. You don't want to get, you just want to enjoy, you know, enjoy your own wholeness.
Well, the problem is that you
enjoy Ishvara.
You depend on the world, you depend on others to make you happy.
Edward said, the problem is you depend upon others to make you happy. Yeah, you depend upon others, people, places, and things to make you happy.
Yeah, right.
And that's the grand illusion.
Yeah.
Because whenever you fulfill a desire, you get a momentary shantavritti.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, and like the clear lake reflecting the sun, you feel at home with yourself because your mind has just become quiet for a moment. Mm-hmm. But you don't have to do the circuitous route. You can just be with yourself. So I say it's like waking. For a jnani, you find yourself getting into these circuitous routes like this, you have to wake up from the daydream. It's just you've been caught in a daydream that takes place from the unconscious, and you have to wake up from it, and then you're fine. But sometimes the daydream lasts for longer than you might want before you can snap out of it.
So nobody has to teach you this. I mean,
you have to be taught.
No, but I meant to say, nobody has to teach you this to search in the world for that wholeness. I mean, that seems
you don't have to be taught to search in the world for the wholeness because you keep experiencing that when you fulfill a desire, your mind becomes happy.
Yeah.
Becomes happy because you have a shantavritti.
Yeah.
But you think the object has made you happy. And then other objects and people and whatnot make you unhappy.
Yeah.
Right? Because they create agitation.
Yeah.
So Nella says, what you said about wanting to be ourselves, when we try to be loved and we think we must present ourselves in a way that others like, and then we aren't being ourselves. But when I say what you said about wanting to be ourselves, what I meant there, this is interesting what you're saying, but what I was actually meaning was we just want to be ourself, the self that we actually are, you know? And the mind keeps behaving in ways that is not resonant with my being. So then you say, when we try to be loved, we think we must present ourselves in a way that others like. Well, that's true because we're thinking that in order to be loved, we need another person to love us. Whereas in fact, being loved is our nature. And if the whole universe was gone, no duality, we would be loved because that's who we are. That's our nature. And then you say, and then we aren't being ourselves. That's true in terms of the body, mind, sense organs, you're contorting yourself in order to try to get somebody to behave in a particular way so you can have this feeling of being loved. But actually, I can just, my body, mind, sense organs and their body, mind, sense organs, the whole universe really has nothing to do with being loved. That is who I am. And yeah, so you can't relax because you're trying to get, this is the whole problem, this is exactly samsara. We can't relax because we've projected ourselves out onto the world and we have to go and try to get it. We try to get somebody to give it back to us, mm-hmm. give ourselves back to us. It's mm-hmm. just awful.
Well, you know what?
Situation.
Meeting Swamiji, he seemed to give love to his students. It's very unique in that sense.
Swamiji, there was nothing. He had that abhayam, that sannyasa vow of abhayam.
Yeah.
He had no fear.
Yeah.
And so there was no way that you could take away his love, his being loved. You couldn't take, impossible for you to take that away. And so when you were in his presence, you felt loved.
Yeah.
Because his very swarupa is that, his very nature is that. And he had, his mind was never afraid. Because his mind was had nishta, was always with himself, and nobody can take the self away. So he didn't need you to be any particular way. It didn't matter at all for his own wholeness. So no matter what you were or who you were, you felt loved because there was nothing in his mind that was blocking that being lovedness of his own being.
Well, it was a very unusual experience to encounter someone like that. I mean,
was it absolutely, because we're used to having conditional love, not. So you could even think, oh, Swamiji really loved me. Well, that's true because there's nothing blocking that loved nature from you. You know, but in a way, it's personal, but it's impersonal. Because everybody got the same dose.
Yeah.
Because it was his nature.
I mean, you couldn't win over Swamiji's love. It was already present.
It was already there. Yeah. Hal says, with the whole universe gone, we'd be loved or we'd be love. Well, the reason I'm saying we'd be loved is because loved is a completed state. Love is like an abstract noun. What does it mean? Love. So if you say love, that you would be loved without a lover. You know what I mean? That state of being loved is a completed state. It's like saying, I am what I seek, instead of an abstract state. I don't know if that, it's language.
Yeah.
Yeah. Does that make sense? Okay, so Hal says, yeah, okay.
Yeah,
Maitreya says, I just watched a 60-minute episode on the Death with Dignity Act that California just passed and which Oregon has had for many years. Any sense of why there would be such a prohibition against taking one's life in most, if not all, religions, and does Vedanta have anything to say about it? If it's a suicide, for instance, when it's considered like a murder of your own self, so that suicide is not looked at favorably by most religions, and I don't think even with India. But in the Manusmriti, it does say, because I had a conversation with Swamiji about this, if in the Manusmriti, which is the Dharma Shastra, it says that if you your life is terminal, say you have an illness and you don't have much longer to live, and there is no quality of life left, then it is all right to take your own life. And in fact, some of the sadhus in the Himalayas, what they will do when they can't manage anymore and they're dying and they're not able to take care of themselves, they'll just walk into the Ganga. But it's the quality of life is gone, your life is terminal, and so you're just at really out of mercy putting an end to it because it was going to die soon anyway, and they don't have a problem with that. That was a great relief for me because I just didn't like, they keep prolonging people's lives in these horrible, dreadful states.
Like they did this home again.
And so I would like to, I would like to have the choice. I might not even use that choice. I would just like to have it. Yeah, so nice to hear. I feel that way too. So Dunya says, remember when you say to ask the question, what am I like? That seems like a good question. In meditation, sometimes when you've kind of quietened your mind and you're just, you know, gently focusing just on your own presence, your mind can ask, what am I like? What is my being like? Because it's hard to have really some words, but the words act as pointers, descriptive words. You know, and then you start to really see how beautiful the self is, your own being is. But that's a good question. What am I like? Just to focus on your own nature. Abhyasa. It should be Hal. With respect to reflection, abhasa. Yeah, it is abhasa. That's right. I thought you were saying something else. The abhasa, that which the reflection is on, as it were, is mitya, having been only from the light that is reflecting it, having no independent existence. Correct. Yeah, that's right. Let me read that again. With respect to reflection, abhasa, that which is the reflection is on, as it were, that which the reflection is on, as it were, is mitya. Yeah. Having been only from the light that is reflecting it, having no independent existence, correct? Yeah, that sounds right to me. It's a little awkward, but just trying to think if there's anything there that I've... Having been only from the light, let's see, that which is the reflection is on, as it were, mitya, true. Having been only... Having been only from the light that is reflecting it. Having been only... I think that's right. It's a little... Language is a little tricky there, but I think that... Unless I'm reading into it, I think that's right. Definitely it has no independent existence. There is no real reflection. The reflection is the light itself, because mitya. When you say the mitya is really only the light, yes, there is no real reflection. Yeah, there's no second light, like that's what's wrong with the sun reflecting in the water. What it's trying to say is that the water can take itself to be the sun. But in the example, there's a, you know, there's like a different, the reflection is different than the sun.
But what is Hal saying?
Just a minute. Nella says, I'm having trouble with the word self from the standpoint of Advaita, or is it only used from the standpoint of Maya to point to Sat? The word seems to distinguish from... Oh, the word within duality, each mind, each body, mind, sense organs complex takes itself to belong to the body-mind sense organs, and so therefore there seems to be many selves. Just like in the dream, say there's many characters in the dream, and each dream says, I am the self, I am the self, I am the self, I am the self. So there's 20 selves, or how many characters are in the dream. But actually the self experience only belongs to the one Atma that illumines the whole dream. So like that, the Atma, the sense of me, this very personal sense of me, if the whole universe disappears, this non-dual me, conscious me, which is me, is all that's left. So from the standpoint of all the body-mind, 8 billion body-mind sense organs, everybody, there's this 8 billion me's, but actually there's only one me. There's only one me experience, and it belongs to the self, which is myself, but there's only one of me. There's one of me, and there's 8 billion minds, right? There's trillions of minds, actually, with all of the little animals and insects and everything. Trillions, trillions and trillions.
Countless.
Countless. See, I am having trouble, so Nala says, I am having trouble with the word self from the standpoint of Advaita. There's only, from the standpoint of Advaita, the very self that is me is the self of all beings. Or is it used from the standpoint of Maya to point to Sat? I am Sat. I am the Sat Chit, the Sat which is Chit, which is Ananda. There is no Sat that is not Chit. The word seems to distinguish from other. Well, no. The thing is the Ajnani is the one who has that Anyonya Adyasa, that mutual superimposition, which ties the one non-dual self to this particular body-mind sense organs, which is not true. Yes, but once there is only one of me, the word self seems funny. Well, this is the thing. In our language, you say, I am, right? I am myself, you are yourself, etc. But even though you take yourself to be the body, if the body, mind, sense organs were to drop, that same self that you had been misidentified as the body is what remains. So the word self is an important word, right? The word self is an important word because you already correctly use that word to identify who you really are. It's just you've superimposed, the mind has superimposed the body, mind, sense organs, etc., onto me. To me, myself. But myself is really Brahman. So even right now, as an Ajnani, their sense of self and the me, the sense of self, is Brahman. So that word is actually an important word. The very self that you've always taken yourself to be is the self that you are. It's just that self is one non-dual self. There are not many of us, there's only me. So you see what I mean? You have to go from who you take yourself to be right now, and we use the word self for that, myself, that you've taken to be finite and to be this body, mind, sense organs. Now you have to recognize that this me, that I've taken to be the body, mind, sense organs, this self, is Brahman. So that's why we have to keep the word. Now when you say the mithya is really only the light itself, well, I'm not quite sure what you mean by light there. I think that's right. But then we have this whole multifaceted creation that is mithya, and all of duality is mithya. But maybe if you're talking about in terms of the abhasa, that is only the light itself. But seen through the maya, identified with the maya. I see, Nella. Yeah, but when you say I guess I was looking at the language rather than the pramana. But the language is really important there, because the knowledge is the recognition that yourself, that you had thought to be limited, is limitless. The very self that you had taken to be limited by the upadis is limitless, is Brahman. So you don't want the word self to change. You just want it to go from this very self that I'd taken to be limited is limitless. This me that I'd taken to be limited is actually the self of the entire creation, like that. So the language, I don't know, we'd have to talk about it to make sure we're saying the same thing here.
Good.
Good. Are we done, everybody? Any more questions? Tal says, on self, I think you are saying the self experience you have always had becomes distinguished from the body and mind experience through Vedanta. Yes, and recognized as being the non-dual Brahman. Yeah, that is exactly. But it's not just that it becomes distinguished. It's recognized that this very self that had always been misidentified with the body, mind, sense organs is recognized as limitless, non-dual, me. It's the whole. Yes, it's the whole, exactly. Okay, everybody. Let's go. See everybody on Thursday, I hope. Om swasti prajapyav paripalayantam nyayena margena mahim mahishaha go brahmane pyashubhamastu nityam loka samasta sukino bhavantu kale varshatu parajanyaha prithivi sasya shalini desho yam kshobha rahitaha Brahmana santu nirbhayaha Om sarve bhavantu sukhinaha Sarve santu niramayaha Sarve bhadrani pashyantu Ma kaschit dukkha bhag bhavet Asato ma satgamaya Tamaso ma jyotirgamaya Mrityorma amritam gamaya Om Purnamadav Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasishate Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi Harihi Om Shri Gurupyo Namaha. Harihi Om. Om Tat Sat. Okay, good night, everybody.